Okay. Well, our banter today is going to be non-existent because I'm too mad to talk about what I would talk about. And if I did talk about it,
that'd just be the episode.
It would be a minimum of 8 hours, I would say. So we're just not going to. Instead,
one of those mini docu-series.
Instead, I will tell you, I wrote something in my notes to say, but thinking about this yesterday. I said, so today I'll tell you a story of women who were able to prove that women will always be better than men in every way, and in fact, everyone should be scared of how powerful we are. And after you hear this story, I think everybody will agree with it. So, anyway, so I'm just gonna get into our story because I'm too mad to talk about. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. It just happened yesterday. June 24th. That's what happened. So, well, I'm gonna get into my story.
Year 2022.
I'm gonna get into my story. Because it was almost, you know, these times seem better than what we're in right now. So, I today will tell you the story of the 40 Thieves, also known as 40 Elephants. But I just call them the Ultimate Girl Gang. So, I got my information from The Queen of Thieves by BZ Marsh, dailymail.co.uk, Wikipedia, and express.co.uk. So, this one isn't as long as my next one, actually, but it's still pretty lengthy. Also, I did these notes, so I'm taking an organized crime class right now, and we have to write, like, a research paper on, you know, some, like, gang or whatever, and then, like, relate to what we've learned in the class and everything. So I was like, okay, well, then I'm gonna find a really cool one that I'm actually interested in, and then also use it on the podcast. So, I found this group, which originally was, like, a men's group in, like, the early 1900s in America. But then this group kept popping up, and I saw them, and I was like, wait, this is way cooler. So, here's the title of the article that made me want to cover this group. Meet the Fur Coat Gangsters, notorious 1930s West End girl gang who hid stolen jewelry in knickerbockers, carried razors wrapped in lace handkerchiefs, and used a hat pin to blind anyone who crossed them. And I just aspire to be them in every single way, actually. So, let's get into it. The 40 Thieves were a group of exclusively women who posed as wealthy housewives innocently browsing the rails of the UK's most luxurious clothing racks and clothing stores before shoving stolen items down their undergarments. They were allied with the Elephant and Castle Mob, led by the McDonald brothers. I only saw that in one article, but that's the only thing that makes sense to me for why they're also called the 40 Elephants.
Elephants, yeah, that makes sense. So that's like their associated group when yeah. they're doing things with them.
Okay, so the earliest mention of the gang in newspapers dates back to 1873, but police records from London indicate that female shoplifters have been active in the area since the late 18th century. So no one's really too sure when the gang was actually, like, fully established, but also, I thought it was funny that they said female shoplifters have been active since then, because they've obviously been active since before. Like, shoplifters has always been a thing.
No, shoplifting started exactly then, and that's the only
late
time.
Late 18th century.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, so many of the gangs.
Part of the suffrage movement, women said, we can steal too.
Yeah. Now is our time. Okay, so many of the gang members started as child lookouts. At her kitchen table, Alice, who was the leader of the gang for, I guess, a pretty good portion of time, would teach her girls how to roll furs on the hanger and shove them down their drawers, which the gang called clouting. Clouting.
Clouting as the
kids,
clouting?
Clouting, as the kids call it these days. Alice herself was famous for clouting 3 furs in one go, one down each leg and one under her gusset. I don't know what a gusset is. Do you?
I think it's like a undergarment.
Yeah.
Not like, it's sort of like a corset, but not as a corset.
Yeah, like near your stomach is what I assume.
That's what that sounds
like. She would send her girls out in teams of 3 or 4 at least 3 days a week. They would typically work department stores, including Selfridges?
What?
It's the name of a store.
Yeah.
They would hit shops all over London and as far as Birmingham and Brighton, whatever, I don't know. So, the women would often wear luxury fur coats, wear diamond rings as knuckle dusters, and hats to hide their stolen goods. They were Britain's most notorious all-female gang and ruled the tenements of Waterloo and Elephant and Castle. So that could be another reason why they're called Elephant. So the gang passed on their secrets from mother to daughter, aunt to niece. So whole generations of families saw crime as a way of life. The women also carried razors wrapped in lace handkerchiefs and were known to have violent outbursts, including one that resulted in a woman blinding a police officer by stabbing him in the eye with a hat pin. Which I literally love all their crime that they do. I don't even care. So, during their heists, the women would often wear beautifully designed hats, coats, and dresses. Because they were trying to pass off as women that had money. So they wouldn't be, you know, like, watched around the store, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, underneath their ensembles, they wore specifically adapted petticoats with hidden pockets or baggy bloomers with elastic at the knee, so if you put it down your pants, it wouldn't go right out.
Yeah.
Jewelry was a favorite target since it was easy to hide up a sleeve.
You get so much more of that in your pants.
Yeah, but then you jingle jangle when you walk. So, the gang would shove stolen jewelry also into their hair. If they had a, you know,
wild if they're gonna get going pat on. Down, that's gonna be way less patted down. Because, like, when is this?
This is, like, the 30s.
So hair is still big.
Yeah. Where was I? Sorry. Oh, and they would replace watches with fake versions during their regular heists, as well as rings. Any of, like, the smaller stuff, they would just swap out for fakes.
Like the stuff you get in bath bombs.
Yeah. So, mink stoles and furs were another top prize, but some of the gang stole silverware, and one even put on a maternity girdle to pinch an entire china set.
That's so funny.
The women gained notoriety operating in the underworld and earned respect from crime bosses, including Craze, because their lucrative and violent methods. After shoving their stolen goods into waiting cars, the women would head back to the slums of Waterloo and Elephant and Castle, where their queen would exchange the expensive items for a generous, wealthy wage. So, during the 1940s, it was not unusual for hoisters, I think that's how you're supposed to say that, hoisters.
Yeah, sure.
As, which is a historical term for shoplifters, to be paid £100 a week, which out-earned men's average wages 10 to 1.
Good night. They're really raking in the dough.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I'm saying. So, while the gang members often stole clothing items, they typically did not wear the stolen clothes, because then you're not making any money off of them.
Yeah, will also be obvious.
Yeah, so their loot was distributed to a network of fences, street market traders, and pawnbrokers. Part of the stolen clothing items were sold to clothing stores, which simply replaced the labels and modified their designs, and then they sold them in their stores. Some of the fences associated with the gang were also arrested, but could not be convicted. So, the gang ringleaders appeared in a secret register of criminals that is now kept by the National Archives, which then existed to help police track down the most persistent offenders. So, the women were completely faithful to their leader, known as the Queen, Alice Diamond, who was known to dole out harsh punishments and carried strict rules, including not helping police officers by informing. So, snitches get stitches. Their code of loyalty dictated rules such as having an early night before, quote, going shopping, which is a good rule, handing over all they stole to the Queen in return for generous weekly wages, and never stealing each other's boyfriends, which was deemed bad for morale.
Oh, that's probably pretty important, actually.
So this is the ultimate girl gang because, you know, the rules.
All those rules make sense.
They do. So let's go over some of the group's most brazen members. So first we have Alice Diamond. Okay. So she was born to criminal parents in Southwark, South London? Southwark?
In 1886.
Her first crimes were aiding and abetting men. Women would carry their tools for burglaries, so police had no evidence if they stopped and searched the men. At the age of 17, she was convicted for stealing from a hat shop in Oxford Street. And by the age of 20, she was the leader of the 40 Thieves. So this girl is, like, living my dreams. Because at 20, you're literally the queen of a gang. Goals.
You've really missed it. Your window for that, Audrey. You're almost
23. Yeah. Way overshot the mark. She wore a row of diamond rings that acted as a knuckle duster. She was chauffeured in a Bentley and always wore a sable coat. The early half of the 20th century, Diamond regularly appeared in the press, where she was once described as a tall and commanding figure with a cool demeanor. Reporters claimed that she was 6 feet tall, despite police records from 1919, which say she was 5'9". So, her reputation made her larger than life, literally.
She's wearing real high heels.
But, I mean, this girl's 20 years old, the queen of a gang, being chauffeured in a Bentley and just wearing, like, the nicest clothes. You got a freaking fistful of rings to knock anybody out.
And she's tall. She's a big woman.
She's 6 feet. Her personality is 6 feet.
I mean, 5'9 is not short for a woman.
No, it's not. That's probably why they were like, any woman over 5'4 is 6 feet tall. Okay, so next we have Maggie Hughes.
All the men have to look up to her.
She was known as Babyface. She had her first criminal conviction at the age of 14 and went to become Diamond's accomplice. She was famed for her red hair, but was an alcoholic and had a violent temper, and once ran out of a jeweler with a tray of 34 diamond rings and bumped straight into a police officer.
Not very bright. That whole plan seems very flawed.
Well, she was an alcoholic, so she was probably drunk.
Oh, that makes sense.
Or just something really went wrong. So after 3 years in jail, she took part in the Lambeth riot at Christmas, which I guess is a well-known thing because they mentioned it a couple times. Mm-hmm. 1925 was when that happened. When the home of Bill Britton was stormed. She was sentenced to 5 months. In 1938, she was sentenced for stabbing a policeman in the eye with a hat pin, which caused him to go blind. There was one report that said that was whenever she ran straight into the policeman, she took out her hat pin and stabbed him in the eye. But I don't know.
This makes sense.
If that was the same incident. Anyway, so that was what one article said. She made a habit out of shouting back at the judge when she was sentenced to jail. It won't cure me. It'll only make me a worse villain. which I fully agree to that statement. She passed her wisdom on to a future queen, Shirley Pitts. And Maggie was thought to have killed herself in the 1970s, but I'm not sure why. That's just the last thing that they wrote about her.
I don't know, sick?
In the article.
Something like that.
Okay, so that was Maggie. Now we have, okay, so next is Ada McDonald. I don't know. That's what I was wondering when I got here. So next is Ada McDonald. MacDonald. She bought stolen goods and sold them in a role known as The Fence. She operated out of Walforth, South East London, and her home was called in Aladdin's Cove of Loot. Which, like, how
that's
cool
so fun.
Does your house have to look if that's what it's called? That's great. So when police visited, she showed them ledgers to demonstrate her honest buying. So she's great at what she does. Shirley Pitts. At the age of 7, she helped her 5 young siblings by taking milk and bread from neighbors' doorsteps, which in every article they said that she was stealing, but if you're just trying to help you and your siblings survive, I wouldn't say that's stealing. And
like
also
surviving.
Don't leave your milk and bread on steps. Dummies.
Clearly left it out there too long, she can get it.
As an adult, she was beaten by one of her boyfriends and the father of 5 of her 7 children.
Oh my goodness.
Chris Hawkins. He stopped following a warning from the Kray twins, which is, I think, that other gang I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they are so respected by all the other gangs that, like, the other gangs look out for all of the girls in mm-hmm. this one. So Diamond took her under her wing and showed her how to shoplift in 1947 when Pitts was just 12 years old. Pitts wore a schoolgirl's outfit complete with straw boater
as the little hat
to act as a decoy. A decoy. Why did I say that like that?
A decoy.
She would often wear different wigs and put stolen items under her skirt and use barrier bags lined with tinfoil to prevent the detection of security tags. So, that's some of her methods. And then last, we have Eva Frazier. She was a leading light in the gang in the 30s and 40s, having risen through the ranks of the gang after joining them in the 1930s. She got 6 months in jail for stealing stockings from Bentles in Kingston upon Thames, whatever location that means. She was also the sister of Mad Frankie Frazier, who was a gangland enforcer for the Richardson gang, who pulled out rivals' teeth with pliers.
Oh my.
But yeah, so
I keep looking at my screen.
So Frankie Frazier was like one of the notorious people of that gang, and so that was his sister.
So he's a notorious person in the other gang Richardson you're talking gang. About.
Yes.
Okay. Oh no, that's a different one.
Yeah, fully different one. There's multiple gangs that are scared of them. So one member, Lillian Goldstein, was also known as the Bob-Haired Bandit. She was notorious for high-speed getaways and was eventually caught stealing lingerie and sentenced to hard labor in prison. For lingerie.
For lingerie. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So the police obviously...
It's like they got Al Capone on tax fraud.
It's ridiculous. So the police obviously took notice of what these women had been doing, and they had been trying to track them down for years, clearly. And, like, obviously they caught a couple, and mm-hmm. but everybody that got caught really just went to jail for a couple months and then got out.
Because they couldn't...
So when police switched on to the gang members' methods, they branched out, hitting rural areas... Well, not the police,
The gang.
The gang. Hitting rural areas and seaside towns, and also made trips to Southend, Brighton, Liverpool, and Manchester. So, to evade discovery, they shipped the stolen items back to London or deposited a suitcase of loot at the railway station's luggage office and left it there to be collected later. They also started developing sidelines, like looting houses and blackmailing people. They would use false reference letters to get hired as maids and then rob the houses of their employers. And it was always, like, obviously, like, very wealthy people because mm-hmm. not everybody could hire maids, clearly.
Yeah.
They also managed to seduce men into brief affairs and then blackmailed them with threats of ruining their reputations. So the gang's earnings allowed them to live like upper-class debutantes. So they hosted lavish parties, bought fur coats, jewelry, and watched dancing in West End nightclubs. Okay, so the granddaughter of a member of the gang, who said she was taught how to steal in the 70s, said, quote, "My Nan was always beautifully turned out. She and her friends looked like film stars when they went out down the pub. It gave them a life that they could never have afforded. I don't think they felt bad about it. They enjoyed buying nice things with the money and putting on the posh. They didn't see anything wrong with it because these things were too expensive for most people to afford, and shops had insurance. My gran liked to go for tea at the Ritz, especially if she could pinch someone's fur coat in the cloakroom on the way out." She was still hoisting, right?
Yeah.
Well into her 70s.
That's funny.
One member of the gang, Bertha Tappenden, was just 5'2" and was convicted of inflicting grievous bodily harm on a man in Lambeth after kicking down his front door and attacking him with razors and knives to settle a score, aided by Diamond and another gang girl, Gertrude Scully. So once again,
he must have drastically wronged them for three women to be showing up at his door.
Many of the 40 thieves were noted for their beauty as well as their shoplifting skills. The other male gangs in the area at the time, including the Brummagem Boy Gang, who inspired the show Peaky Blinders, which I haven't watched.
I keep getting told to watch
but
it, though.
Everybody watches it. The Cray twins and the Soho gang boss, Billy Hill, brother of Miss Hughes. So there's a lot of women
seems to be
in
like,
this gang.
The women are in this gang and the men are in various other gangs.
So they were all careful not to encroach on their territory because he respected their right to earn their own money. That's so nice. First of all, who are these men in these gangs? Because husband
all
material.
All the brothers.
I know, but husband material.
Who have been aggressively beat up by their sisters.
That's right.
They know what they can do.
So they respected their right to earn their own money free from male interference. Like, how were these times with these men better than they are
now? Here's the thing. These are all criminals, though.
So? They're all,
I'm saying and the high society is the issue.
So, yeah, correct, and it always has been. Anyway, yeah, everybody in politics is also a criminal, and I would trust these people with my life more than I would ever trust.
I'm a big fan of organized
anybody.
Crime.
Yeah, I am, too. That's why I took this class. I was like, yes, let's hear about it. I love it. So, yeah, free from male interference. Quote, these women fought harder than most of the men and were feared by men and women in their communities, as they should. So, any gang who would shoplift on their turf was forced to pay the gang a percentage of their takings. If they refused to pay, the gang arranged beatings and kidnappings of the offenders until a payment was received. So, various members were eventually caught and served their time in Holloway Prison. Their sentences did tend to be short, but the rations were meager and they slept on boards. And some of them were sentenced to hard labor in prison. Mm. So, once released, almost all returned to the gang. Eva got 6 months for stealing a stocking from that one store, which I already said. When her brother was in prison, she helped to run his protection rackets in Soho and even sent her daughters to collect payments as the police would not stop a child. In the 1950s, the gang was facing more store detections and had to rely more on disguises. Through their lives, some of the women became friends with young actresses as they partied in Soho nightclubs and stole dresses for them to wear on the red carpet. When Frank Sinatra came to London in the early 70s, he made a special visit in his limo to Eva in her little terrace house in South London to pay his respects. Sometimes the Hoysters' lives became entangled with those of the underworld bosses through affairs, family ties, or marriage, yet they fiercely guarded their right to earn their own money. And they let them. I couldn't find anywhere how large the gang ever got, but I saw that over 70 direct members of the gang operating in the 1920s and 30s had been identified. They were often said to be able to meet equal numbers of men in battle. And that is the story of the 40 Thieves, also known as the 40 Elephants, also known as the Ultimate Girl Gang, and I wish I was a part of it.
I liked that.
I know. It's, I love that story so much. I feel like it wasn't as long as I thought it was, but I did, like, hours of research on it because I wanted to make sure everything was, like, actually accurate and it's not, like, a bunch of tall tales.
Doing it for school.
Yeah. So, it took a very long time, but I really liked that story. And, you know, they were doing it for all the right reasons to make their life better. That's how they earn their money. They didn't care who they were stealing from because they knew those stores had insurance and the items were way too expensive for normal people to afford. And the people they robbed all had too much money. And the men were terrible because all men are terrible. So I agree with everything they did. And, you know, if you're going to get in their way, you might just deserve a hat pin in the eye. And that's on you for getting in the way. That's just how the dice roll. But yeah, that's my story. One of my favorite ones I've ever covered. I know I did my notes this week and I was like, these are two of probably my favorite stories I've ever covered, I feel like. Mm-hmm. For true crime, at least.
I like both of mine.
Yeah. I'm sweating.
Okay. This is another one of those, I read it in the calendar.
That's good. I'm glad my present has been put to good use.
So very useful. It brings up morale in the office and provides me with resources.
That's good. And ideas.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm covering the Highgate Cemetery, which is in London. Sources are highgatecemetery.org, Wikipedia, hauntedrooms.co.uk, nationalparanormalsociety.org, and paranorms.com. I don't know whose National Paranormal Society it is. So, in 1836, Parliament passed an act creating the London Cemetery Company. I don't know how businesses are created in the UK, but this does not seem to be, like, a government association. It's like, yes, this company is allowed to exist.
Yeah.
Because, like, it goes to, like, a whole bunch of, you know, normal company issues later. So, that's why it has to be a business. So, that confused me. Either way. So the cemetery dates back to 1836.
You can maybe move the microphone
closer to you. So, for 3,500 pounds, which is 273,598 pounds today, which is roughly 335,530 dollars. They bought 17 acres of land to use for the cemetery. This land was located on part of the Ashurst Estate. I feel like there should be two H's.
Yeah.
Ashurst Estate. Anyway, over the next 3 years, the cemetery was landscaped with exotic plants and unique architecture, as it was meant to be London's principal cemetery. You know, like Bellefontaine or Calvary. Yeah. Whichever one. Those big fancy ones in St. Louis. Where anybody who was anybody wanted to be buried there. So, the 20th of May, 1839, the cemetery opened with 15 acres reserved for Anglicans and 2 for everyone else. Burial rights were granted either in perpetuity or limited, which means, like, your grave plot is only yours for so long. I don't know if they move the body or just put someone else on top of you or what. Here's the thing.
They open up your casket and throw them on top.
It's a very common thing in Europe to do because there's limited space. We don't need to do it here because we have so much loose ground.
Yeah.
But they do it in places like New Orleans in those above ground cemeteries. Yeah. Your bones get to be there by themselves for, like, you know, 5 years or something, and then they push you to the back and then put somebody else in. Because the preservation standards are so low there. Not like, it's not something like someone's doing wrong. It's just, it's so, like, humid and gross that the bones sort of just turned to mush. Anyway, I always think it's funny when those are options, though. Hey, you can have your spot forever, or someone else can move your body and we'll never know where you went. The first burial at the cemetery,
I really didn't know that was, like, a popular thing.
It's extreme. That's out of necessity.
Well, I guess, I mean,
In
what do I really know about cemeteries anyway? I mean, I guess a little bit more than the average person, but not about what they do with your bodies.
Yeah, no. That's why, like, when I was doing my research for my master's thesis, all of the, there weren't stones that predated certain times because the limited ownership of the space is so normal there that you're, oh, well, you've been dead for 50 years. No one around knows you anymore. Pop that stone out. Put somebody else there.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people that we will never know existed. Share? Anywho. I don't have time to get angry about that subject either.
We've got bigger mountains to tackle.
The first burial at the cemetery was on the 26th of May, 1839. If there's a 9 in it, I will say 19. 1839. So it's the same year it opens. It is that of Elizabeth Jackson, age 36, from Little Windmill Street, Soho. That's it. That's her. A woman died. She's buried.
She's going to get buried. Where's she going to go?
As Highgate was the city's most desirable cemetery, it quickly needed more space, adding 20 more acres in 1856. This new section, known as the East Cemetery, had a tunnel connecting it to the chapel on the old half. I do believe this cemetery is on the other side of a road, which is important later. The first burial in the East Cemetery was in 1860. It was that of Mary Ann Webster, age 16, daughter of a local baker. These things don't matter. They're just fun facts.
Yeah. I mean, it's matter something to add, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, like, they're not relevant to the overall story that I'm telling, other than, like, here's some fun things to know about this space.
Here are some of these people.
Anyway, so in 1860, there were 10,400 graves in the old cemetery, which is so many. Because 17 acres is not
that's a lot.
Now we're going to have a long list of interesting people who were buried there. And here's the thing. There are two routes I could do. I could do genuinely famous people who affected the world. Or I could do People who had the weirdest descriptions about their jobs. That shows the latter.
Yep.
So anyway, some interesting people that are buried at Highgate Cemetery include Karl Marx, John Atchler, who was the horse slaughterer to Queen Elizabeth. Oh, Queen Victoria. I'm sorry. So yeah.
Stop it.
That was his description.
Stop it. That's a job.
Yes, the official horse slaughterer of Queen Victoria.
I cannot believe this.
Abraham D. Bartlett, who's a zoologist and superintendent of the London Zoo, who's best known for selling the popular African elephant Jumbo to P.T. Barnum.
What did that inspire Dumbo?
No, just Jumbo was a famous elephant.
Oh.
I think it's where the name Dumbo comes from, but... a bunch of Dickens' immediate family is there, but Dickens is not because he's in a church. He's, like, famous, and they force people who are famous to be buried in churches in England. Like, in the floors of churches.
You think they want to be stomped on for the rest of their lives?
Apparently. Michael Faraday. That's just a famous person that people know. Like, Faraday lamps or lights or something like that. He was like a Nikola Tesla kind of person.
Okay.
Inventor of things during the invention age.
Yeah.
There's at least 5 people who were famous for being painters of miniature portraits. What does that mean?
You know,
I assume they're painting miniature portraits, but I don't know how you're getting famous for that.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating.
I mean, obviously it was probably famous after the fact, like every artist, basically.
Like, some of that's what they were known for, is just painting tiny pictures. You know? Where are they putting the tiny pictures?
In those churches lockets? To get stomped on.
Well, no, it's clearly they're not good enough because they're buried here, not in the churches.
But the paintings weren't good enough, so they got to go there.
Henry Gray, author of Gray's Anatomy, like the big medical book. John Holman, who's the 19th century... James Holman, 19th century adventurer, known as the Blind Traveler. So I hope he was blind. That's far more fascinating. I didn't look these people up. That was too much. Thomas Hopley, headmaster who beat one of his pupils to death. That is why he is known and on this list.
Oh my god.
Alexander Litvinenko, who was a Russian dissident, murdered by poisoning in London. James Locke, a London draper credited for giving Tweed its name, which is, that's 100% Tweed. Out of freaking Beyond Boulder Dash.
Wait, what was his name?
What is James? Yeah, James what is Locke. James Locke famous for? And you're like, you're never going to come up with anything. People are going to write stuff about, like, authors. Like, yeah, he's the one who made the word Tweed.
It's like that video I showed you of Chris Fleming when he said, oh, yeah, I'm the creator of the word umpteenth.
Yeah. It's like he read this list and said, oh my gosh, that's an occupation. He just named things. Anyway, George Michael, like the singer who died recently.
Yeah.
Tom Smith, inventor of the Christmas cracker.
Oh, wow. Like those popping. That's a big thing over there.
Not big enough to be in the church, though.
Yeah.
Adam Worth, who was a criminal mastermind, possibly inspiration for Sherlock Holmes' nemesis, Professor Moriarty.
Wait, I need to write him down. I want to research him.
Adam Worth. W-O-R-T-H. Originally, this guy Adam Worth was buried in a pauper's grave under the name Henry J. Raymond.
So people wouldn't, like, deface it?
I think it's because they didn't want... He's a criminal mastermind. No one wants to know who he is.
Okay.
Or he doesn't want to know who he is. Blah, blah, blah. Something like that. George Eliot, the author. And Bob Toms, the greatest Victorian cricket umpire.
You all know him.
Yeah.
You all know and love him.
The greatest. He was the greatest. He was number one.
Get the helmet off of him.
Tom Sayers is the last person we're going to talk about who was buried there. He was a famous bare-knuckle prize fighter who still maintains the record for largest funeral in the history of the cemetery, with over 10,000 mourners present, including Lion, his faithful dog, who is chief mourner.
Oh my god. Does that mean he was the saddest one there?
He was just in charge of the morning.
That is actually so adorable and sad at the same time. That would be Aubrey at my funeral.
Yep.
She would lose her. She would kill herself and get right on top
she
of the casket.
I was like, she'd never,
she would never recover.
Yeah. She'd be those dogs that just sleeps on the grave for the rest of their
life.
Has
to go visit the cemetery every day.
So, in the 1960s, the London Cemetery Company declared bankruptcy, leaving the cemetery uncared for. Which is why it's like, it has to be a business. Well, they stopped... I mean, like, clearly there's people recently buried in it, but for the most part, they had stopped burying people because I think they ran out of room. So basically, everybody's dead and no one's caring any... Everyone's dead who was related to people who were buried there. Anyway, in 1975, the Friends of Highgate Cemetery were formed, which have been continually working on restoring the property since then. They're the people, who maintain it now.
Yeah.
There's, like, a whole bunch of, like, oh, and then somebody bought it, and then somebody bought it, blah, 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 but I didn't care, because it, at the end of the day, it was still this group that seems to be in charge. So, we're to the paranormal portion of this, because it's a cemetery, there's not a lot of history for these.
Yeah.
So, apparently, from the time the cemetery opened, there were reports of strange goings-on, but the bulk of these experiences were... started post-World War II when the cemetery started to fall into disrepair. So now it's not, like, a pretty park. It's, like, a creepy forest.
It's spooky.
Spooky. Which, I get that. Your mind plays tricks on you in those spaces. One of the early oddities, so pre-World War II, is the story of Elizabeth Siddall, S-I-D-D-A-L.
Okay.
Who's buried in 1862 with a book of poems written by her husband, renowned Victorian artist Dante Gabriel Rossetti. A number of years later, Rossetti decided he wanted that book back, so he was like super super sad that his wife died. He'd like written this book of poems for her, and I think he just wanted to like reminisce about what he said about her. It wasn't like a weird I want that back now kind
Actually,
of thing.
I changed my mind.
It was all some sort of romantic mourning process.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he gets permission to exhume the coffin. When it's opened, Elizabeth's body is found to be perfectly intact, and the coffin is full of luxuriant copper-colored hair.
What?
So it was sealed well enough, and I don't know what the hair thing is.
Yeah, the hair is what
creeped
me out.
Half of it makes sense. Either way, so that's one of the earliest, like, oddities.
How weird.
Now we're going to get to more recent things, because cars exist, so that's why I know it's more recent.
Okay.
So one night, a man broke down next to the cemetery and was terrified when he looked through the gate and saw an apparition with glowing red eyes glaring back at him through the gate.
Yes!
And that's the first ghosty. Most of these are just, like, experiences people had rather than, like, descriptions of
Which
haunts.
I like those.
So, I do too. I was just giving you a warning that I'm not going to give you, like, histories on this person who we think did this.
Yeah.
No,
the only time I've been able to do that is that last UK one I covered.
There's been a few that we've done it, been able to do it for, that they're, like,
but even then, half of them were made up people.
Yeah, that's usually the problem.
But it was still a good story.
So, a person walking down, is it Swains or Swines?
Where? I would say Swains.
Swains Lane. Is that rhymes?
Yep.
which I think is the road that's dividing the old and the new, so the east and the west halves of the cemetery, because it's talked about a lot. So they're walking down Swain's Lane when they're knocked to the ground by something that glided out of the walls of the cemetery. This thing was described as gruesome and dissolved into thin air when a car shone its headlights down the lane. This like weird gruesome tall entity seems to be a pretty common sighting though.
I just love that it's described as
just
gruesome.
That's it.
And tell me a little bit more about what gruesome looks like to you.
Right? So a different
it was so
person
terrible.
Was
it just was gruesome. I can't say just anymore. So
details is too much. It's too scarring to think about. So a different person was walking down the lane when they started to feel like they were being watched. They turned around, and a few meters behind them, they saw a tall, spectral entity hovering above the ground.
No.
This person who thought they were being followed froze and ended up passing out. I think they literally just, like, froze in fear
probably,
and passed out from fright. And a while later, they woke up and everything was normal again because they weren't scared anymore.
Yeah.
Either way, I do believe these are the same entities.
Okay.
Like, I think it's just this big, tall, hovering, floating figure. Did they also describe it as gruesome? No, they said it was floating and then they passed out.
Too scared to know if it was gruesome or not.
I like this one. This one I like. This next one is a young mother was frightened once by a ghost of a cyclist struggling to make it up the hill on the same street. Because I believe the entire property is on a hill.
That's too good. So
it's a sloped cemetery.
A ghost cyclist struggling to make it up a hill.
It was very funny to me.
That's so good.
This is like a common one that people sure to tell about is this cyclist. There are reports of a woman, and here's let me preface this next little story. There's two competing versions that are obviously the same ghost, and I just think it depends on who's inspired that day on how it's told. One is either like a hag witch who murdered loose random children. The other one, it's like clearly a mother going through some mental health issues that like killed her kids.
Okay.
And then like feels guilty about it.
Yeah.
Either way. So there's a report of a woman or hag who supposedly murdered her or some children. Either way, she is seen rushing through the gravestones looking for these children, either because she wants to kill them again or because she's sad that she did this to them.
Yeah.
And she always has long gray hair. Sometimes it's flowing behind her. Sometimes it's gross and matted, depending on who's telling the story. I don't think the ghost looks two different ways. I think it's just a matter of flair.
Yeah.
But she's seen.
Very interesting.
A dark figure has been seen standing perfectly still, staring into nothing.
Okay.
Apparently, if you approach this being, it will vanish. And then reappear just a little bit away. Oh, it's like okay. In a video game when you're like trying to follow this thing, goes poof, and it's over there.
Follow
and you gotta go over there.
Follow me here.
Yeah, like a will-o'-the-wisp. I like that one.
That's a good one.
There's the ghost of a nun who's been seen wandering around the cemetery. And then the big thing that's like the most famous story of Highgate Cemetery is that of the Highgate Vampire.
Ooh.
Which to me appears to be entirely the invention of a local psychic.
Okay.
Who makes it such a big thing that like there's a whole bunch of cameras that go there, TV crews, journalists are swarming the cemetery, you know, trying to find proof of this because this is how like big the psychic made it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't ever find anything like these groups. The only proof is only ever through the psychic. So the vampire was reported to be 7 feet tall.
Okay.
Have piercing hypnotic eyes.
Okay.
And was wearing a top hat and long black coat.
Alright.
This is the description of the vampire.
I like it so far.
A seance that was conducted by the psychic in the catacombs, which I assume is the tunnel leading from one side to the other of the cemetery, attempted to deal with the vampire, you know, to banish it in the seance. And for an hour, the participants were bombarded by a malignant supernatural force that only stopped when the circle was broken.
Spooky.
So the popularity of this vampire story led to vandalism and the destruction of graves.
Come on.
Corpses were even dug up, decapitated, and the heads were put on stakes. These people were just going all sorts of crazy about this story. I don't know if it was in fear or if it was for fun. Probably both.
Both.
Anyway, the medium that originally promoted the vampire was charged with the destruction.
Oh my god.
As it was their claims that did this, and no one ever found anything. There's a whole bunch of cameras. People were constantly trying to figure out what this thing was and found absolutely nothing. It's just only this psychic that's promoting this. So they end up serving.
Yeah, but you can't freaking blame her.
I don't know how England works. So they end up serving 3 years in prison.
Oh my god. That's ridiculous.
Here's the thing.
I mean, but it's the same thing as, like, if Zach Biggins goes somewhere that's supposedly haunted, does
and then other
thing,
everyone tries,
then someone tries to break in there and they blame him for that? How is it his fault that people are dumb and you don't have beefed up security?
They were super, super promoting this and encouraging all of these activities.
I mean, if you're encouraging hunters to in and say, go dig up these graves,
doing that part, but I think they were encouraging this this. They were fear-mongering is what they were doing. They're actively fear-mongering based on what I read. I didn't want to give them any credence because they don't deserve to be remembered for
causing all this destruction, even though they didn't necessarily order it.
I still think you should charge them with a fine.
Of yelling. Yeah, I think at most. Fine makes more sense than prison time.
That's so
either
good.
Way, it's like
community
shouting.
Community service, you have to go clean it up.
Anyway, that is Highgate Cemetery.
I like that one.
Especially I just like all the weird people that got buried there.
That cracks me up.
Horse slaughterer to Queen Victoria.
I cannot 100%
the best one on
believe
here.
Believe that. My he should have been buried in a church.
Yeah, right? My next favorite, though, is the Greatest Victorian Cricket Umpire.
Cracks me up.
How do you get that title?
He was the greatest. What do you mean?
He was number one.
Okay, well, that concludes our tales today. We're actually going to go get tea and then come back and do another story. So, try not to kill anyone and don't mess with the Ouija boards. Goodbye.